Radio Bucky, a community project by Bucky, for Bucky.
Hey guys, it is Spotlight and...
It's me again, the Gathering Storm.
And we're here at the Bothy Book Festival. Just quick update, Badger the Mystical Mutt was a great turnout this morning, brilliant. But you'll hear that over on the lads and on the sofa.
Radio Bucky, your local internet radio station.
So we're here at the Station Hotel Versailles, and we're with two authors called Lynn McNichol and Laura Jackson. Known as McNichol, also known as McNichol and Jackson. So my first question is, what inspired you to be author?
They are everywhere, all Celtic music. Spotify's, you can go to Waterstones, you can go to Amazon, you can go to any good bookshop, and you'll be able to find the books.
So thank you very much for giving this chance to interview for is there anything else?
Just thank you very much.
And we love Radio Bucky.
We love Radio Bucky.
Yeah, Radio Bucky rocks.
Okay, thanks, and I hope you enjoy this evening.
Don't forget to add us to your favourites. www.radiobucky.co.uk.
So this is Zappen. So far I'm here with two children's authors. We're writing a book about a chap called Badger.
Yeah, it's a series of books about a dog called Badger who is very magical, kind of, when it happens. He's kind of Tommy Cooper for kids.
Tommy Cooper for kids, about a dog. And you've written a few?
We have indeed. We have 7 published, and we're in the middle of writing book number 8 as we speak.
Where can one get one of these books?
Many places. You can go to any good bookshop. You can go to Waterstones. You can look online at Amazon. You can pretty much get them anywhere, can you? And you can get them on Kindle as well, and all the usual e.
But what about getting it in the local library?
Very much, I hope so. Certainly all the libraries we visited here in Bamshire have got them.
So, co-authors, is it difficult to write as a team or is it difficult to write as individuals? It's a complete medical thing to do.
It just works for us, it works. We're really good at brainstorming, particularly over a glass of red wine. And that's when a lot of our best ideas come, isn't it? It works well. We both have different ways of working. I tend to work with a computer. I'm also quite, slightly OCD. Laura, on the other hand, is old style, and she likes pen or pencil and paper. And either way, it works. You know, we gel, and so far so good. The editor's happy. That works for us.
So, talking about how you do your research, I mean, you know, how do you get the feedback? Do you have kids yourself?
No, I don't, but I do have many nieces who are really giving feedback, and we know many children.
What about you?
Well, since we have been doing so many events, we've done over 700 events with Badger. Now, we're kind of method writing in that we're watching the reaction from the children as to the different things that Badger, the character in the fur, actually does, and we try to incorporate some of them into the books. And also I have nieces and nephews as well, so I gauge their reactions too. And we're children at heart. Whoever grows up.
Let's take you back a little level. Let's look at when you're talking about being kids, having kids. Did you have a very good English teacher that sort of like sort of prompted you in this direction, or was this the life you chose, or did you come into it by accident?
Actually, one of my English teachers was James Galloway, the author, I certainly, from when I was at primary school, I had terrific teachers, and I was a voracious reader, particularly Enid Blyton, and I collected all the books, and I started to try and write those kind of books, and I just loved English. I love language, I love words.
Big word for something that's so far voracious.
Is it?
I don't even know what it means.
It begins with a V, whatever it is.
Well, lots of words that I could say, if that would be the knowledge of what I'm going to say in there with that, aren't
you? I had a big appetite for reading.
So what were you when you were growing up? Where did your inspiration come from? Was our teacher at school sort of like an English teacher that spurred you on? Because obviously spelling must be important.
Spelling is important. I still can't spell. I'm still a bit rubbish at that. But I know English teachers are so important, and one particularly stands out. Mrs. Gwen, who is probably no longer with us, in my secondary school, she was fabulous. We were all extremely bored with doing Julius Caesar for our O-level. And she brought in an old record player and began to play an LP of Joyce Grenville. And we were hooked. Joyce Grenville's, the rhythm of her speaking, her writing, it was joyous. So, me
say?
I did, yeah. From 2000 to 2005, I was a publicist with BBC Scotland. I started off doing children's publicity, and then I moved on to entertainment and music, and I got to go to LA with the orchestra for the Grammys when they got nominated for a Grammy. Didn't win it, but we got the front page of the LA Times, which was terrific, and a trip to Hollywood. So, I was at the BBC, but I decided I wanted more. So I left there and was freelance for a while. I'm still always working with words because I was always writing press releases and I was always writing info for other people. And then suddenly, you know, the Badger idea dropped by, and here we are now doing this full time.
You also worked in Ballymore.
I was the publicist in Ballymore, yep, for Seas. Yep.
As a publicist, can you just say
a publicist looks at the information that's given by the programme makers, forms a press release, forms a publicity plan, works out way in advance, you know, if you're looking for a Radio Times front cover or you're hoping for some of the Sunday Supplements front covers, or set up interviews with the talent that are involved in the shows. So yeah, I went to Tobermory with a journalist to interview Miss Hooley from Ballymore, and I was on location several times for Ballymore, and also worked on loads of other children's programmes, from 50-50 to The Raven to I can't even remember, but I was the children's publicist.
You can't name drop.
I can't.
Okay, that's enough. That's
too many.
You don't want to offend anybody.
You name it, all the BBC Scotland shows. I did Live and Kicking came to Scotland during the summer every year. So, you know, from Jenny Halliwell to Mel C to the Wombos, we had them all on Live and Kicking, and so I would, you know, be setting up interviews with the Wombos, etc.
Well, I remember them very well. I mean, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for talking to me. I love that little Radio Bucky thing that you did, so can you do that for me again?
We love Radio Bucky!
Radio Bucky rocks!
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Music, news and so much more. This is Radio Bucky.
So we're here at Pertsoy Primary School again with Barry Hutchison, the author. So
Barry, what inspired you to make books?
What's been your favourite book you've wrote so far?
That's quite tricky, because asking an author to pick the favourite book is like asking a parent to pick the favourite child. I know which one of my children is my favourite, and I keep the other one in the attic. I think maybe the first book, because it was my first one, is always going to be a bit special, but writing is like anything else you do.
Tell us how long and how much books you've made.
I've written over 60, over 70 books now, I think, in the last 5-6 years. I started back in 2008, 2009, and longer than 2007, so I've written kind of the 70 books in the last 9 years.
Inspired you.
Stories, and love writing stories, but that was the first time that I realised that the author was like a job we do. So I thought, I'm not quite fancy that, because I'm writing stories anyway, I might as well try and be paid money for it.
So the books that you've made, are they aimed to anybody in particular? Or?
I write for quite a wide range of all children's books at the moment, although I have an e-book series for adults publishing at the end of this month called The Bug. Children at the moment. I have books for kids as young as 5 up to
loads of different age groups. Have you got any ideas of what kind of books you would make next?
I'm always working. I've got a big like notebook which is full of ideas. So at the moment I'm working on a series called The Spectral Collectors, which comes out in October 2017. So that's world exclusive, and I haven't really told anyone that yet. So everyone knows this. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. After that, I'm not sure what I'll do next, but I've got loads and loads to choose from.
Do you just publish books, or do you make films, or?
I've written some stuff for the TV. I write comics. Some of the books I've written have been picked up by film companies, and I've been hopefully helping them work on the scripts for those films. So, yeah, I do lots of different stuff as well as books.
So, what inspired you to come to the area here?
Well, I travelled around a lot. Where I grew up in the Highlands, we never saw an author in school. And I think it would have been really useful to me as someone that loved writing to meet someone who actually did it for a job. So I travelled around the whole of the UK, really, and beyond, talking about how I got started and why I love writing and why I love reading, in the hope that it kind of just inspires other kids to do the same.
So far as you feel in the local area?
It's great, yeah. My mum is actually from Aberdeen itself, so I spent a lot of time in Aberdeenshire when I was growing up, so I know it pretty well. So yeah, I love it.
Any particular reason you started to write?
Just, I think, like I said, it was more just to entertain myself. We had nothing else to do. We had no time, no kids going around. I read all the books in the library. It was a very small library, so I read all those in no time. And then I had no choice but to make up my own entertainment.
The local area, or the area are you off to next?
Well, I'm off home for a few days, which would be nice. And then I'm going down to somewhere in the Central Belt. And I've forgotten the name of the place, but it was the first event I ever did back in 2010. So I'm heading back there next week. No, that's fine.
Thank you for letting us interview you.
So, just now, we are here at the Bothy to interview Aline Templeton. Right, guys, here we are with Aline Templeton. So we're going to find out a bit about her and see what she hopes to get out of today's talk. Aline, welcome to Radio Bucky. How are you today?
Thank you very much. Very well. I'm particularly happy to be back in the Northeast, because I've spent 7 very happy years in Aberdeen, and I just feel at home when I come up.
Brilliant. So tell us a bit about your genre of writing.
It is just straightforward crime novel. I have a detective called, it's D.I. Marjorie Fleming. She is a farmer's wife, which is a little bit different. And they're all set in Galloway. The series started when I was down there at the time of the foot and mouth epidemic. And I got to thinking what a difficult job it would be to be in the police force when they were having to force people to let killing squads onto the land. And, you know, the people you'd be dealing with, you would know them, they would be your friends. And while I was thinking about that, I thought, well, you know, there is your conflict situation. Here is a policewoman who is going to have to do this in this small community, and her job is going to pit her against her family, her husband, her community. And from there, the whole series grew.
Brilliant. So what are you hoping to get out of today?
Well, I'm hoping to meet a lot of interesting people, because I always do when I come and do these events. People are endlessly interesting. I think my books are usually more about the people than they necessarily are totally plot-driven. The plot comes out of the action of the people. So wherever you are, you're working, you're picking up atmosphere. And anyway, the Northeast people are just great.
Well, that's fantastic news. And we wish you all the very best for today's talk.
Thank you very much indeed.
And thank you for coming on air.
Okay, here I am at the Pertsoi Bothy Book Festival. I am just a wee word with Maggie Craig. A very interesting talk we had from the pair of them, Aileen Templeton as well. But my colleague interviewed Aileen. So now I'm going to talk to Maggie. Now, as you all know, I'm the Gathering Storm, but she's written a book called Gathering Storm. So what's all that about then, Maggie?
Well, Gathering Storm is about a man called Robert Cato, and he's a Scotsman, but he's wearing a red coat. He's in the British Army. He originates from Aberdeenshire with a name like Cato, but he's been away from Scotland a long time, and he comes back to Edinburgh because we're just kind of building up to the 45, so his job is to work out how serious the threat is from the point of view of the government.
Okay, that sounds very very intriguing. Very interested to read your historical books as well. You've written a book about the women of that period. What's that called?
Damn Rebel Bitches, The Women of the 45. That book, next year, will be its 20th anniversary. I decided in 1995, when people were talking about the 250th anniversary of Culloden, that somebody ought to write about the women, because I knew there had been more women than Flora MacDonald involved. But they all just spoke about Flora MacDonald, so I thought, well, I'll write the book. And that book's just had a life of its own and gone all round the world, so I'm really proud of it.
Well, that's good to hear, McQueen. And now I believe that Gathering Storm is going to be the first in a series?
Yes, it's going to be the first in a trilogy, and I'm not going to make it longer than a trilogy. So the second book's called Dance to the Storm, and that's going to take in the start of the Rising. Probably go to the Battle of Preston Pans, and then the third book will cover Culloden and end the story.
Okay, McQueen. You hear. I hope you had great success with that, McQueen. And we'll hear from you again, hopefully.
Radio Bucky, your local internet radio.
I was invited to Port Soy to do a talk on the true story of the SS politician, Whiskey Galore. Last year, Port Soy benefited from a fantastic summer of having the film crew turn up on the remake of Whiskey Galore. So I come to speak to the village with regards to what inspired that film to be made, which was the true story that happened back in 1941.
So for those of us that don't know about Whiskey Galore, for the younger listeners like myself, do you want to sort of enlighten them in a few words as to what Whiskey Galore was all about?
This was a ship that was bound for America back in 1941. It set sail from Liverpool with 246,000 bottles of whiskey. It was the finest blended whiskey of the time, and it was due to follow up the protected waters of the British Isles before it then met a convoy in the north of Scotland and then dart across the pond to America and Jamaica. En route, she lost direction and she ran aground on the Western Isles south of Eriski. So the story is about the islanders who then decided that they would go and salvage any bottles that were still remaining on the ship. And the authorities were chasing them, so it was a real Keystone Cop stroke cat and mouse chase for the authorities chasing the islanders to leave the whiskey alone, and the islanders getting something that they hadn't had for many, many months.
So I believe they're remaking it, is that correct?
Yeah, the remake was done last year across some great locations in Scotland. I think it's really going to put Scotland on the map. It's also going to take the film to a different audience. Most people may have heard, certainly in Scotland, with regards to Whiskey Galore, but most people south of the border, the younger community, not really that interested in maybe some of the Elan 1940 black and white comedies. So this remake, I think, is going to be fantastic. And also it will take the new interest in the growth of the whiskey market across China and Russia, etc., to new heights. So that was finished last year. They're now just completing the music and several other bits and pieces, due to be at Cannes in May, and then distribution probably August, September on the silver screen.
So I believe Ewan McGregor's in this. Do you know any of the other actors that's in this?
Ewan McGregor's not in this.
No, Ewan McGregor's not in this one. that's a different film. There must be too much whiskey I had in that little reception. So you're also a collector, are you?
Yes, I've been collecting for 20 plus years. And it was the collection that got me attached to this. I bought a bottle at auction with salvage reports, and then it's the research that I've done following that purchase going back 16 years ago.
So is this your main job?
No. I have an engineering supplies company down in Grangemouth.
Is that to uplift the whiskey from the bottom of the shores?
No. That's been tried and failed. It may well be that with a new interest in the film that you're going to get some rich American or something come across and say that he wants to maybe redo that task. But it's unknown if there's any whiskey actually still underneath the ship.
So you when you're up here, do you go and do a wee visit to all the wee stills up here, or do you know them inside out?
Yeah, Glendronach is a favourite dram of mine. So yeah, I always do a drive past there. Scotland is renowned to have fantastic distilleries across the whole of Scotland. So I don't cherish any particular one. I quite enjoy sharing my tastes across the whole of Scotland.
So when James Bond says shaken, not stirred, which whiskey do you think he's talking about?
He's not. He's talking about a martini.
It shows you how well I know my whiskey's done it. Good job I'm not in your job, isn't it?
Indeed, absolutely.
Yeah, I should have been listening to what you were saying, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you should have turned up for
absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you done a book or anything like that?
No, I haven't. No. There's a couple of subject matters that are from... That would allow a book to be written, I'm quite sure. I mean, the legend of Whiskey Galore is phenomenal. That the original book by Compton Mackenzie was written in 1946, and it gets reprinted every year, even today, and available in 8 different languages. I mean, the interest in that book is remarkable. So, I think there's a place for an interesting story to be done. So, watch this space.
Yes, well, I mean, I noticed there was quite a few questions being asked, and, mm-hmm. and you're obviously a wee specialist in whisky, and of course, being one of the main local industries up here, mm-hmm. I can understand why there've been so many questions. Does the water make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, there's several components that make it. Personally, I think the water is probably one of the biggest things, which changes across Western Isles, Highlands, Lowlands. And there's so many, producing whisky now is a science, and there's so many factors that actually affect the whisky. And what every distillery is trying to do is produce the whisky that's going to meet most people's palates, whether it's the growth market in Scandinavia, where they like peaty whisky, or it's the female market that like a less harsher whisky, a softer whisky. These other growing economies like China and things like that, you know, they're really starting to become very, very well versed in whisky.
And this acquired taste overseas has come from the Scottish market exporting? You don't really get whiskies from other countries, do you?
Yeah, Japan is producing some incredible whiskies now. I mean, they came and learnt our craft quite a few years ago, and they've taken the production knowledge back to Japan, and Japan have produced what's voted to be some of the best whisky in the world. It'll never be Scotch whisky, and you get purists that say, you know, there's nothing like Scotch whisky, but the beauty about it is it's a personal taste, and it's what people... It's what you personally like, and I don't think you should close your eyes to anybody else's efforts in producing a good spirit.
Is it not all about the water?
Japan apparently have very similar climate, etc., to what we do. So it's got a
it's
lot.
Always
of
raining here.
Well, I think there's in the areas where they produce the whiskey. I think there's a fair amount of water there, and that's the key ingredient. I don't think the last 12 months we're going to see a drought anytime soon. I mean, there's plenty of water, and the water table is pretty high at the moment, so I don't think there's a problem there. But whisky distilleries at the moment is on a massive growth market, so it's wonderful.
More employment for locals then?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and you know, in the Scottish economy, take a massive income from what we produce in Scotland. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hewitt. It's been a delight speaking to you.
You too. Thanks very much.
We're Radio Bucky. You can listen to us on a podcast.
Okay.
All you do is go into Google and you put in Radio Bucky, and this magic of the internet should pop up, and you should be able to listen to this interview.
I look forward
sometime,
to it.
Hopefully.
All right, I look forward to it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Video station.
Off now, bye all.
And this is Radio Bucky, Sam Ramoti in Pertsoy on Sunday, the 13th of March, and I'm interviewing Alex Hammond, former First Minister of Scotland. Hello, Alec.
Great to be on the programme.
Radio Bucky.
Right, okay.
Well, it's great to be back on Radio Bucky.
Excellent, excellent. And you've done a book, I believe.
That's right. Well, I've been doing the Dream Shall Never Die. It's a book I published about the independence referendum. And I've done it in all the great book festivals around the land. I've done the Edinburgh Book Festival, the Hay Book Festival, the big English book festival. But I thought I would respond to the invitation to bring it here to the Salmon Boffy in Portsoy for the Portsoy Boffy Book Festival, which obviously, in everything except scale, leaves all these other book festivals standing. Now, this may not be the largest book festival in the world, but it's one of the best.
Yeah, and it's close-knit, isn't it?
It's a lot of fun.
And you used to be the MP for this area.
I did, that's right. This was in my Banff and Buchan constituency, so I was elected here in 1987, and I've just been talking to a lady who's voted for me in 1987, so she was dating herself as well as me.
So what got you involved in politics, and what age were you?
Well, it's all detailed in the book, see, so I should tell people on Radio Bucky to buy the book, you see, and then they can find out. But the first bit of the book is actually about that. Really, I mean, the strongest influence on me was my grandfather. He was the one who, he wasn't particularly party political, but he gave me an idea about Scotland, and he told me then, taught me that Scotland was a very special place, and that the Linlithgow, where I was born, was a very special place in Scotland, and I should always regard it like that, and I should always do my best to promote that idea. And so he gave me a kind of pro-Scottishness in my outlook that was very important in my formative years, and of course burns still brightly today.
So where do you regard home as being?
My home's Strickland. I'm in Aberdeenshire, and my hometown is Linlithgow, and I don't get back there as often. Although I did the Linlithgow Book Festival, incidentally, that was one of the ones I did last year for old time's sake. But I get back there occasionally now. My dad's now staying in Erskine Home, but when my dad was staying in Linlithgow, I used to be back a lot more. But he's now in Erskine Home, so I don't get back as much. Having said that, I was there last week, so I get back sometimes. But my home is in Strickland in Aberdeenshire.
What about your mum?
My late mother was a fantastic lady, very, very influential in my upbringing, obviously, but not perhaps on the politics side. My mum, for most of her life, was a Churchill Conservative. She was the only Tory in Preston Road, which made her quite unusual. And much to the embarrassment of my dad, who was firstly a red-hot Labour voter and then an SNP voter. So my household, my mum and dad were always arguing about politics, but my mum was a great lady. And eventually, to help me, I think, more than anything else, she started voting SNP because she felt that would be better for me if she supported her husband and her son.
I love that story that you told me about Dundee and all the people queuing and they were all waiting for the vote.
Yeah, I mean, it was 1st of September 2014, I was campaigning in Dundee, and there was this queue of folk in the sun, and I thought there was opening time for the pubs or something, but no, it turned out they were waiting to register to vote. They wanted to register, because unless they got registered, they couldn't get the vote, and I've never seen anything like it. I mean, that was the level of enthusiasm. People who'd never voted before, who thought that politicians were all a bunch of, chancers, and that is a euphemism, but said to me, as one lad said in the queue, he said, look, this is the first time there's been something worth voting for, and I thought that encapsulated the interest and the emotion and the enthusiasm which the referendum engendered.
I thought you were going to turn around and say something like a lot of the people were queuing in Dundee because they'd never seen the sun before.
No, well, it was a very sunny day in Dundee that afternoon. No, it was about lunchtime, actually, thinking about it. It was right beside the statue of Desperate Dan, which... that was a very big influence on me, because...
Desperate Dan?
No, Desperate Dan was a huge influence on me, obviously, but more the sight of these people queuing in the sun. And the next night, as I was telling the folk here in Port Sawyer, I went to the Park Hotel in Falkirk with Dennis Canavan, doing a huge meeting of undecided voters. And I was saying to folk, as you do, I said, look, yesterday, because I was very influenced by the importance of this, and I said, yesterday, in the great city of Dundee, I saw something astonishing, something amazing, something unique in the city of Dundee. And somebody shouted out, a Tory. So I said, no, a Tory. I saw a group of people queuing in the sun, waiting to exercise their democratic franchise.
You know Shrek?
Aye.
You know he's got a Scottish voice.
Yes, he has.
Well, I have a big problem with this because, I'm Scottish. I'm Scottish, and Mike Myers does the voice for Shrek.
Aye.
And I don't think that's right, because he's trying to, as a Canadian doing a Scots accent, I don't think that's right. Do you agree with me?
I think it's no bad. No. I mean, people always say, they said the sort of same thing about Mel Gibson and Braveheart.
Yes.
You know, that his accent wasn't right, but maybe it wasn't, but I know that he put a lot of effort into it, and I'm sure the guy that does Shrek's put a lot of effort into it as well. Listen, put it this way, I've heard worse. I've definitely heard worse.
I think I should have done the voice for Shrek.
Well, exactly. When obviously, I should have been Braveheart and Mel Gibson. I should have done William Wallace. That's quite clear.
Yeah, but he's good looking.
Yeah, well, exactly. But, you know, it's a few years ago, man. I'd have been right there.
So, what other influences have been in the party? I mean, what does Alex Salmond's address book look like? I mean, it must be quite fast.
Chaotic. No, Alex Salmond's address book, I've got one of these iPhone 5s or whatever they are. You know, the new ones, the big ones, you know? And my young assistant confidently said to me, look, you know, I can download every address you've had for the last, you know, since 1908, since technology dawned. So he did, right? I now have the most vast address book on, well, it must take up megabytes on its own. The only problem is that half the folk in it are dead, or no longer at that address for one reason or another. So I've got a vast address book of addresses, many of which are now redundant, and I'm now going to go back to my previous, more limited address book, but at least I could get everybody there. Plus the fact I'm having a distinct difficulty, and even through the search mechanism, such so vast is this address book. So anyway, I'm going back to simpler technology.
So, how do you feel about the people at Bucky?
Great, fantastic.
That's the answer I expect.
Well, should be the answer you expect. I mean, I've never represented the people of Bucky, but that's not for the want of trying. The nearest I got to them was where I represented the first two houses in Cullen. That's the nearest I ever got to representing Bucky. But I'm glad to meet you with the Gordon constituency, which I represent now. It's inland, of course, doesn't go into the coast. But I'm creeping up there, you know. I'm up to Rainy.
Very good.
Aye.
Excellent. And tell me, why do you think they keep changing the political boundaries? It must be very confusing for people, especially the MSPs.
I agree with you. Well, the MSP ones, to be fair, haven't changed for a long time. And they still are operating in older boundary. Well, they've changed them a bit, to be fair, last election, but they haven't changed them as much as the Westminster ones. And I don't agree with these changes. I think they say they have to change them to get an exact population size. But I think far more important than having an exact population is to represent an area, you know, which has a coherence attached to it. So, by and large, most boundary changes I've seen have been silly. And, I mean, I can tell you there's been villages in the northeast which have been in my constituency, then out of my constituency, then back in again, then out again, and sometimes I've represented them, even though it's two different constituencies, for MSP and for MP, I've had villages that I was still both the MP and the MSP for. Places like Mintlaw just now, and Stricken, where I stay. But I am not a great believer in the boundary changes. I think they should be far less often, and they should pay far more attention to natural communities as opposed to having an exact population distribution. I don't think at the end of the day anybody cares that much whether a constituency is 60,000 people or 80,000 people. Why should we care, you know, as long as it's roughly that size?
Thank you very much, Alex Salmond. Do you want to just say that you do listen to Radio Bucky?
Listen, I'll tell you what. Second only to LBC, Leading Britain's Conversation, where I'm on every Wednesday, Radio Bucky is my second favourite radio station. And if you ever offer me a chat show like the one I've got on LBC and Radio Bucky, I'll accept like that. No problem at all.
Well, we'll definitely look into that. I could see a proposition coming. We head to head. Ali versus Salmond.
Ali versus Al.
Ali versus Al. Okay.
Right, done deal.
Thank you very
much. This is a shake of the hands, folks.
Okay.
I hope you've enjoyed the show and hope you will listen in next time.